Welcome, everybody. This is David Newman, and my special guest today is Sean Ellis. And let me give you 30 seconds on Sean's fabulousness even before we say hello. So Sean Ellis has been working in the speaking industry since 1999. He's the founder of the Speakers Group, and he's the creator of Succeed Speaking. And Sean also serves on the board of the International Association of Speakers Bureaus, or IASB. In Sean's career, he's booked speaking engagements for folks like Wayne Dyer, Marcus Buckingham, Naomi Judd, Magic Johnson, and many, many, many more. Sean loves to help meeting planners find the ideal speakers for their events, and he also loves to help speakers improve their marketing and expand their platform to have more fun, reach more people, and make more money in their speaking business. And who doesn't want a big honkin' slice of that? So Sean Ellis, welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you, David. Thanks for having me here. Great to talk to you.
So I also want to tell people right off the bat where they can get a piece of your empire online. I mentioned the two organizations, and we're going to talk a little bit more about these later in our conversation. But right now, I want everybody to click over to www.succeedspeaking.com, grab Sean's Success Kit. That is a free download from www.succeedspeaking.com. Lots of fabulous things. I actually downloaded it about 10 days ago, looked through it. There's a whole bunch of fabulous things that you need to get your hands on, so go do that. We're not going to wait, but, you know, just go do it as we're talking. And then Sean's other website, the Bureau side of his business, but it's really Bureau 2.0, and we'll talk about that in a moment as well, is thespeakersgroup.com. And so there's lots of innovative things happening in the Speakers Bureau industry, at least the Speakers Bureaus that are going to survive. There's a lot of innovative things happening, and Sean is at the cutting edge forefront of that as well. So lots of resources even before we jump in. And let's jump in. Let's jump in, because one of the questions that I get quite a lot, and I'm sure, Sean, you get this too, but I'm not as well positioned to answer it as you are, is emerging speakers, new speakers, or even mid-career speakers, they say, well, when should I approach a speakers bureau? When is a speakers bureau going to take me seriously? How do I get their attention? Where and when in my career should I consider adding Speakers Bureau as a partner to my success?
That's a good question, and it is a question I get a lot, and I'm on the receiving end of a lot of inquiries from speakers who want to be listed or want to work with the Speakers Group. And a couple of things I would say to that. One is, just as a speaker, one thing you should know is that when a Speakers Bureau works with a speaker, if I'm going to recommend a speaker to a client or put a speaker, even put a speaker on my website, I'm basically hanging my reputation on that speaker, because I'm endorsing them, whether it's by having them on my site or by actually endorsing them, recommending them to a client. So knowing that, then what a speakers bureau wants to see from any speaker they work with, what I want to see is to make sure you've got a solid track record. So that's one of the reasons that it's difficult for someone who is just starting out, or maybe you've been speaking for a while, but you don't have all the materials yet and your testimonials and all those supporting materials in place. It's very hard for me to, you know, to really do much for you at that point, because I don't know who you are yet. And I frankly don't trust you yet, just because we don't know each other. So I would say what I recommend to speakers is, you know, go about building your business, do the right things on your own through marketing, branding, you know, getting out there, getting more experience speaking, and pursue that. And then at the right time, speakers bureaus will naturally find you as you're out there, your volume increases and all those sorts of things. So I know that's maybe not necessarily what someone wants to hear, but that's really, if you want a formula that will help you get in with a speakers bureau and build that relationship, I would say wait until, just, you know, do things the right way on your own, and I am more of an advocate of letting that speakers bureau relationship happen more naturally over time.
Well, let me also, let's take half a step back, because, you know, you and I are working under the assumption that everybody knows the role and the function and the business model and the economics of a speakers bureau. And I don't think everyone does, because I get questions like, well, you know, I can either market myself, or, you know, maybe I'll get in touch with the bureaus.
Yeah.
So it's like, and again, if they're not ready, and we'll talk about what ready looks like in a moment, speakers bureaus, and I tell my clients this all the time, but again, you having sat on all three sides of the table, I want to get your take on this too. What I tell folks is speakers bureaus are not your salesperson. They are not your agent. They are not your, you know, until you have a good speakers bureau relationship, you're basically inventory. And a bureau owner and a bureau agent really works for the hiring entity. They work for that corporation or association or convention or meeting planner who wants to put together a kick-ass roster of terrific speakers, and they hire the bureau as basically a buying agent and as a filtering and sorting mechanism to put great choices in front of them. Now, the dynamic changes a little bit, and Sean, I want to hear your take on this, the world's longest question. Once you're hired, then absolutely, the bureau agent is your partner, is your advocate, is your liaison, and those relationships should be cherished and developed. But let's go back to the first half of my marathon question about, you know, who the typical bureau owner, bureau agent really works for, and how the dynamics of that buying versus selling relationship really work in real life.
That's a very good point and an important distinction to make there. You're right. The speakers bureau, we do primarily work for the meeting planner or buyer, or we'll use meeting planner in the broadest sense here, anybody that's planning a meeting and in a position to hire speakers. But that, it's the meeting planner that we cater to most of the time. And I'm saying we collectively, as, you know, using the traditional speakers bureau model, we're doing a few things a little bit differently here, but just in general, a speakers bureau, you know, we need to get the meeting planner to trust us and trust our expertise, that we can recommend the right speakers for their meeting, that we can be a gateway to help them connect with the right speakers. So until we've got the meeting planner on board, we can't do anything as far as booking a speaker until we have a meeting planner. We could have a roster of the world's greatest speakers, but if we have no meeting planners, nobody's going to win in that deal. So that's true. We are responding to the meeting planner or going to them, to offer our expertise and our support in helping them find the great speakers to put together that great lineup. And then, as you said, once we have a booking, now we've got a little different dynamic there, where the speaker is a client to an extent. In that case, we've got the speaker and we've got the client, and we're here kind of as the hub in the middle, and we serve all parties at that point. But until we get to the booking, we're not so much going out there proposing a specific speaker, going out there to sell this one speaker. And I know that's what speakers want and expect from speakers bureaus a lot of times, and I'm glad you brought that up here, because it's something, one of the first things I like to help a speaker with if they're trying to navigate this speakers bureau world, is to help them understand this one dynamic, because I think it's probably one of the biggest misunderstandings, and it can lead to frustration with speakers being frustrated with speakers bureaus. And it's really just a case of understanding how the business really works and what bureaus are really about.
Absolutely. Well, and let's also go back to your earlier point about quote unquote being ready. I know you and I talked about this offline. You know, the rule of thumb that you hear knocked around the National Speakers Association and some other sort of speakers who have been around for a little bit, is that a good time in your career to reach out to a bureau is when you're booking at least between, let's say, 20 and 30 speaking engagements per year, and your speaking fee is north of $5,000. So $5,000, $7,500, $9,500, at that range, you know, between that fee level and that amount that your own booking machine is starting to crank out, you might be a good asset. You might be a good partner for a bureau relationship. Are those numbers about right, or kind of where do you see those numbers? What numbers do you look for when you're, you know, when you're looking at a mid-career speaker who's just at their tipping point and you think you could really, you know, impact their career?
No, I would say those numbers are right in the right ballpark, and there are always exceptions to that. I mean, you don't have to meet that, you know, those specific numbers before we'll talk to you, but that's kind of the sweet spot, it seems to be, is 20 or more events, a speaking fee of $5,000 or more. That's usually the indicator of somebody who's out there speaking pretty regularly, who's pretty well established. And, you know, also another dynamic in that is it's an indicator of somebody who's established, but it's also just from the financial aspects of it. A speaker's bureau is paid a commission, and a speaker is going to pay a speaker's bureau a commission. So when we start getting, you know, into lower fees, especially, you know, below say $2,000, then at that point it really doesn't make financial sense for the bureau or the speaker for that commission to be there. So that's another factor in that equation.
Absolutely. There has to be that headroom so that the bureau is happy with what they're making and the speaker is left with enough to be happy for what they're making.
Absolutely.
So let's say I'm there. Let's say magically someone waves a magic wand over speaker little Susie Cream Cheese, and Susie's now booking 25, 30 dates. She's got nice speaking fee. She consistently gets $5,500, $6,500. How can a speaker, quote-unquote, get in with a speaker's bureau? What do you look for? What kind of approaches work? What kind of approaches don't work?
Sure. The number one thing I would say with any tactic, any strategy is to be patient, because I've had a speaker that I've booked, one of the top five, possibly even two or three, number two or three speaker, most booked speaker in my career, is someone that it took us a couple of years before, from the time we were introduced to the time that I first booked her, and then things really got rolling from there. So you have to be patient for starters. But as an example, that relationship, it came from an introduction from another speaker. And I think that's one of the best things, because going back to what I said about, you know, a bureau is going to, they have to hang their reputation on any speaker they recommend. Well, if there's already a speaker that they know and trust, and that speaker says, hey, you should really, really take a look at Susie over here, well, I know that just from experience, I'll always look at Susie or that speaker that someone that I know recommended. It's the same as we all like referrals, no matter what business, what area of life we're talking about. So it's really hard to beat that, a personal recommendation. Other than that, you know, going to the other end of the spectrum where you just send out an email blast to, you know, 100 speakers bureaus and say, you know, hey, I'm a speaker, look at my bio, I'd love to work with you, I would say don't even try that. That's a waste of everybody's time, because speakers bureaus are overwhelmed with that kind of message. So you've got to find some way to make a personal connection. And if if it is going to be a cold contact, at least make it a gradual campaign trying to get to know that person. Don't try to go from zero to book me in one email. Start gradually and think about what kind of value could you offer that bureau. How could you help them, knowing some of these things we talked about, that a bureau is catering to the meeting planner, they're looking to win more meeting planner clients. How can you help them in that process? Because if you can help them build their business, show that you're interested in them, not just interested in adding bookings to your own, you know, to your own business, which of course you are, but show that you appreciate that bureau. That'll always stand out from the crowd.
And let's also, there's another part of the myth. Absolutely. So I love everything that you're saying. Let's say that now we fast forward the clock again. And now you have a great working relationship with little Susie Cream Cheese, the very successful speaker. Let's even say that her fee, you know, she's more in demand and her fees are now approaching $10,000. A really good, solid bureau relationship. You love the speaker loves you. Even then, how many dates a year typically would that bureau relationship generate for the two of you together?
good question. And it's, of course, it's going to vary from speaker to speaker. But, you know, I would say a big bureau, like let's take some of the big bureaus in Washington and New York, you know, one agent may book anywhere from 200 to 400 events. That's one of the big bureaus on an annual basis. Then you've got smaller bureaus where, you know, maybe it's one person and that person might book anywhere from, you know, 20 to 100 events a year. So you divide that up, divide it among all the speakers that are out there. Obviously, there's not enough bookings to go around for every speaker to get booked 20 times by a bureau. So if you've got a really great relationship, that agent just loves you, you know, maybe you could expect let's just say 10 dates a year possibly. But I think more realistically, you know, anywhere from zero, there are those years, you know, it might take a couple of years in between bookings. Let's say zero to six is probably a better range. I don't know. I'm one person throwing out some numbers here, but sure. I would say from conversations I've had with speakers where in years past, a speaker with that solid relationship might in total get, you know, 50 to 75% of their business from bureaus. I'm hearing that those numbers are now going down to 15 to 20% of their business coming from bureaus in this current marketplace. And that's somebody that, again, has those solid relationships. So the, you know, the moral of that story is you can't depend on a bureau to just, you know, just be the magic bean that's going to transform your business.
Right, right. Exactly. And a lot of people, you know, it's that same thinking that, you know, that's the magic bullet. If I could just, quote unquote, get in with the bureaus, I'm never going to have to sell again. And that's just hugely dangerous. And I know that on both sides of your business, both Succeed Speaking and the speakers group, it's very important that a speaker come to you with a well-packaged, well-articulated brand and programs and everything where they have some significant experience in selling themselves, because I'm guessing they need to teach you a little bit at the beginning of the relationship. Hey, here's how I've sold myself. Here are some of the key words. Here's some of the trigger events. Here are some of the key pain points that when you hear things like this, Sean, that indicates it's a good fit for me and my program.
Absolutely. I just saw a speaker showcase at the IASB convention, here recently, last weekend, actually. And one of the speakers followed up with, you know, with me and with other bureau agents, sent us, you know, the one sheet, the usual stuff, but she also sent this document that was, you know, how to sell me. And, that to me as a bureau, I mean, that's the greatest tool, because there's no way I can know you as well as you know you. So I can read through your materials, watch your video, and I can, you know, give my take. But yeah, you tell me, what is it that you've found that works? What are those key words, key phrases, key scenarios? That's what you really want to do with, once you get, you know, get that relationship established with the bureau, is educate them. And if they're more successful, obviously you're more successful.
Completely true. Let me also, while we're talking about how to sell me, there are some tremendous resources. I just want to point people once again to succeedspeaking.com. And what I want you to do is pop over there and grab Sean's Succeed Speaking Toolbox. And we talked about this. We kidded around about this again offline. You've got the training video in there, the Speaking Revenue Audit Worksheet, 7 Myths of Speaking Success. That's the special report. I was very upset with you because you're promising people the 21 innovative and inspiring ideas to grow your speaking business. And I lodged a complaint, a formal complaint, because there are actually 24 in there and not 21. So you're even giving extra value on top of what you promised people.
I know. You caught me in. You caught me, and I've enrolled in remedial math, so I can go back and apparently do a better job with counting. But hey, always under promise, over deliver, right?
Exactly right. Well, let's talk. I want to switch gears because you mentioned IASB, which again, for folks who are following along with our alphabet soup of acronyms, is the International Association of Speakers Bureaus. And you did just come back from this fabulous convention that they had. I'm curious, what are they talking about in the hallways? What's the buzz? What's the word from IASB and your colleagues around the country and around the world about the Speakers Bureau business model and the future of the industry or anything else that you learned?
Sure. Well, we had a when we kicked off the convention, we had a burning issues forum where we did a survey on the spot to ask those in attendance, what is it that's on your mind? What do you want to talk about here? And I can tell you that the two top issues I think are probably the same issues that we're all interested in. And number one is just the evolution of our industry, of the marketplace. We know things are being done differently, and as it relates to bureaus, speakers are more easily accessible. We can go direct to anyone. All you have to do is get on Google and you can find anyone. So we've got dynamics like that. There's younger meeting planners coming in who do things differently. They communicate differently. They have different interests. So we're talking about that. And then also the other big thing is just the economy. The economy is still a topic of discussion. We're not in the heat of the recession like we were a few years ago, but it is a different marketplace out there. Funds are still tighter in a lot of places. And even if it's not funds being tighter, people are a little bit more cautious about how they're spending their money. So whereas, they used to, throw around thousands of dollars for a great 45-minute speech, now they may be looking for that speech plus some follow-up material and other resources to help continue the message beyond the keynote. So those were some of the hot-button issues. I mean, we all know that things are being done differently out there. Speakers bureaus have to adapt and evolve if they're going to be successful. So that's the biggest thing, I guess, is just to know that we as speakers bureaus know, we know what's going on out there, and nobody has the right answer yet. But we're all looking for ways we can add more value to the speakers, to the meeting planners, and just to make sure that we're still staying relevant and staying a valuable partner to those we work with.
Well, and let me synthesize these two ideas that you've just shared. One is the How to Sell Me document. Two is on your How to Sell Me document, you should have a section that's titled Beyond the Keynote, about all the things that you're going to do for that group way after you leave the building.
Absolutely.
How about that?
Right.
Pretty exciting. See, if you listen to Sean Ellis, you will have these takeaway ideas. I'm just here to take notes and be your assistant to capture these bullets, folks. So, take notes, do what this man is telling you to do. Bureaus, certainly in the last few years, I'd say the last maybe 5, 6, 7 years, maybe even longer, again, you would know better than I, have had a tough time. Obviously the rise of the internet, 20 years ago, before the internet was predominantly everywhere, it was like trying to, pick up a needle in a haystack. I need a good speaker. Where do I go? It's like, well, there's no internet, so I better call somebody that knows who all the good speakers are. And obviously it's not just that's a very simplistic view. But what are some of the innovations and some of the changes? And I also want you to talk a little bit, Sean, about what you're doing at the Speakers Group by way of innovative ideas and some twists to the business model. But how are some of the more forward-thinking bureaus escaping obsolete status?
Sure. Well, I think everybody's got a different take on, what to do here. And I'll share kind of what my take is on that. But one of the keys is the fact that speakers are more easily accessible. On one hand, you might think that makes a bureau obsolete because it, like you said, in years past, a bureau providing access to speakers, that was the real value. It's kind of like, the Yellow Pages. Once upon a time, if you needed to find a restaurant, and you didn't know the area, well, you go to the Yellow Pages because they've got the answer. You do the same thing. I don't have a clue where to look for a speaker, but I'll call the bureau. Yeah. Well, now how often do you use the yellow pages? If it's only a directory, well, Google does a pretty good job of that. But what we've got now is because speakers are so easy to find out there, you can find thousands or millions of search results. Now bureaus have another job, which is to really help the meeting planner sift through all of that data. And that was one of the keys from one of the technology or one of the future trends speakers talking about the internet in general, is where we went through at one time, it was all about the data. Wow, all this data is out there. Now it's a matter of who can synthesize that data. And, in our world, the speakers bureaus, that's how speakers bureaus can add value, is by helping a meeting planner funnel that, you know, the data, the speaker profiles, to here are the, you know, the ones that are credible for you. So that's in general what kind of what that conversation looks like. What we're doing here at the speakers group is actually pretty different from what I heard others talk about. And I think it comes from my mindset. As you said in the introduction, I love meeting planners. I love the clients I work with. I love helping them, but I also love working with speakers. I started the speakers group to work with a smaller group of speakers to help them with management and marketing. And I do some speaking on my own. So I think I kind of have a speaker's mindset to some extent, and just a desire to share a message, to help get, you know, get positive meaningful messages out there. So what we're doing at the speakers group, we just redeveloped our website, and we're shifting to a bit of a membership model to go along with the more traditional bureau work we do. But so speakers can join the speakers group, and it's an invitation or referral only kind of deal. So it's a very select group, and goes back to, you know, synthesizing that data, where some speakers bureaus have literally over 8,000 speakers on their website. We've got less than 300 or so right now. So trying to whittle that data down to bring clients. Okay, here are the ones that, that we recommend you look at, and not just great speakers, celebrities, whatever it is, but we're creating an identity around helping people live a better life and build a better business. And for the speakers who share that mission and vision with us, then we want to be a real platform. So we can provide all the usual bio photo materials that meeting planners want to see, but also opening up our blog so speakers can blog there. We've got, for those who join the speakers group, we have direct links to their websites and social media, profiles, just to, you know, let's not pretend that you can't find these speakers directly. So if you value us as a speaker and you want to be a part of the speakers group, then, you know, let's have a real partnership here and say, we just want to help you get your message out there. Of course, we want to help you get booked, sell your products, whatever it may be. So we can be a better partner. And I believe by doing that, we're ultimately being a better partner to the meeting planners too, because now we're giving them this one destination where they can find these great speakers, and, you know, they don't just find a bio and then, well, if I want anything else, I've got to go somewhere else. No, we'll provide everything that they need right there so they can get a comprehensive look at these speakers.
Well, and you said something really important. I know that you wrestle with this. I wrestle with it. Our speaker clients and speaker friends wrestle with it. You said meeting planner. And this is one of the big pet peeves I have, because meeting planner as a job title, you know, we have the fabulous Professional Association, Meeting Professionals International, MPI. A lot of speakers think, oh my gosh, I need to go to MPI. MPI is where the meeting planners go. Meeting planners hire speakers. True, not true. I mean, who's your real client when you target job roles or associations of different types of folks? Is it really quote unquote meeting planners, the people with that job title, or who is it if it's not them?
Yeah, once upon a time I thought that too, and you're right, it's meeting planner. I use it again in the broadest sense. We'd probably be better off calling them the buyer, or coming up with some other label, but those who officially hold the role, or who hold the official title of meeting planner, probably it's a very small percentage of them that actually would be your target clients, because a lot of them, what they do is they book the meeting space, maybe they book the catering, whatever it may be, but a lot of them are not very involved in the actual booking of speakers. It's more of, you know, it might be executives, vice presidents. Sometimes in an association, it could be the education coordinator. Sometimes it's the executive director of the association. And that's, I think, it's one of the challenges of our business for any of us, is trying to figure out. It's not as simple as, you know, I'm just going to go buy this list of 50,000 meeting planners, and that's the gold mine, because that's really, you know, out of 50,000 meeting planners, I don't know how many of those are actually people who would be in a position to buy a speaker. So you've got the actual buyer is scattered all across a number of different job titles. So yeah, meeting planner is, I guess you could say the lazy way to describe anyone who's in a position connected to a meeting, who is buying or hiring speakers. That's how I use it. That's definitely not the literal, the literal application.
Right, right. And so right now I'm channeling our salivating listener. And the salivating listener is saying, well, give me the job titles then. So is it just, again, in your experience, you know, VP of sales, VP of marketing, who are some of those people that are a higher probability prospect than a meeting planner?
Sure. Yeah. If you're someone who wants to speak at a sales meeting or at sales conferences, definitely go to the VP of sales. If you're going to an association, again, I would say either it could be the education coordinator, although a lot of times that person would be more, connected to the breakout sessions as opposed to the main keynotes, which depends on what session you're going for. If you are going for those keynote slots, it could be anywhere from the executive director, or better than that actually would be to look up, if we're talking about associations, look on the website and see if you can find who is on the convention committee for this year, or the education committee. Try to find those committee members, because they will actually be probably a better source for you. And if you get in with one of those committee members, we've all had that situation where somebody calls us and they say, well, we're going to our committee meeting next week. Well, if you can establish a contact, build a relationship, and have an advocate on that committee, you'll be much better off, because I've lost bookings when, you know, I just came in just as a supplier and I've got a speaker, and then I get that call, well, Sally on the committee just saw this person speak, and so we're going to book him. So don't underestimate the value of a committee when you're talking about associations. But otherwise, corporate communications could be another one. Training and development, you know, look a little bit deeper. And there's a pro and con here. The good thing is, not everybody, these others are a little bit harder to find. So you've got tons of speakers out there marketing to that meeting planner list, and those meeting planners are overwhelmed by speakers they really don't want to hear from in the first place. If you dig a little deeper and can get into some of these more specialized roles, and I don't say that to, a meeting planner is a very specialized role, but I say in these other, whatever kind of position, whatever you want to call that. But, if you can establish contacts there and go that way, build a relationship, you're actually getting in, more likely to get in with the true decision maker by taking that approach, versus even if you do get in with that meeting planner, they're probably still going to ultimately present you to that VP or somebody else.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and it's like, you could say, hey, really bad news, buyers are everywhere. You know, you can't really find one particular spot. You know, buyers are everywhere. Say, hey, really good news, buyers are everywhere. So, you know, it does cut both ways, right? Either you'll get introduced, or you'll, you know, as long as it's clear what you're trying to do and what you're trying to accomplish and what it is that you do and who you do it for, once you have a relationship with somebody in there, they're likely to pass you on to the right person. So, well, no, it's not me. It's Bob over here in conferences and events. Or no, it's not me. Let me, you know, connect you over to Sally here in our marketing group, and she does all of our, field leadership confabs and so on and so forth. I also want to talk, Sean, because we mentioned MPI and meeting planners as not necessarily a great, well, they're great. They're just not maybe relevant. So I never want to say a bunch of people is not great. They could be great, but they're not great for you.
Exactly.
So let's look at some other types of groups, because people are always interested in, you know, where should I showcase? What could I actually get in front of a group if it's not going to be an MPI chapter or an MPI national event? You know, there's PCMA, which is the Professional Convention Management Association. There's HSMAI, which is the what is that? Hospitality Sales and Marketing,
right?
Association. ASAE, obviously, the American Society of Association Executives. You know, those are three or four I know of. What are some other groups like that where either someone like you is likely to be in the audience and be exposed to somebody for the first time, or, you know, association clients, corporate clients are more likely to be in a hiring role in that audience?
Good question, and I'm glad you brought that up, because a couple of others that come to mind immediately, in addition to the ones you just mentioned, would be ASTD, the American Society of Training and Development, and especially if you are one of those speakers who does have the follow-up materials available so you can speak, but you also have training or resources, or you can do webinars, whatever it may be. Getting in with the training and development is a good one. SHRM, the Society for Human Resource Management, would be another one. I've heard very good things from speakers who have spoken there or got plugged in there. If you want to speak, I mean, if you want to get in front of speakers bureaus, there is a showcase that's connected with the IASB convention every year, and you have to apply to be on the showcase like any other showcase. But that's a great way to get in front of speakers and let them experience you in person. And I would say, again, going back to when is a good time to approach a bureau, same kind of thing applies to get on that showcase, because I've seen speakers on that showcase, and I won't name names, but where I thought, you know what, you'd probably be better off waiting a little bit, because now you've made a first impression on me, and I don't think you are quite ready yet. It's going to be very difficult to turn that around. So don't rush it, but when you feel like, you know, I'm ready to go, and your clients are telling you the same thing, then, you know, get on that speakers bureau showcase, and you'll get in front of those bureaus. But another one that I'm not as familiar with, but I just heard from someone from there, is the International Association of Exhibitions and Events, which it represents a lot of the trade shows, which I don't personally do a lot in the trade show industry, but a lot of those trade shows have continuing education programs and have speakers as part of them. So that would be another opportunity there.
Got it. International Association of Exhibits and Events.
Correct.
Wonderful. Any others? Any other maybe industry, you know, because people think, well, you know, I'm big in healthcare, or I want to be big in front of the Fortune 500, or I'm big in real estate. Any industry specific kind of big 800-pound gorillas that we haven't mentioned?
Yeah, any of those. If you are in healthcare, you know, maybe you want to look at the American Hospital Association. That's a good point, too. You can always dive into one of these particular industries, and, you know, most any industry has an association. So if that's where you want to specialize, you know, go there for sure. Trying to think of another one. There's a public relations association, and I can't think of the initials off the top of my head.
It's PRSA.
Okay. Yeah. So if that's another one that, especially if you were, you know, want to do events that, you know, like maybe it's client conferences, or could be events that have a more marketing twist on them, where a PR person might have some connections there. That could be another one to get in front of some key influencers, even if they're not decision makers, maybe some influencers there.
So, Sean, that brings up a great point, which is about sponsorship. How many times are you or your clients being asked not for a direct booking saying, hey, come in and talk to our folks, but come in and talk to our vendors, our dealers, our distributors? You know, for example, a bank may say, hey, come in and talk to our clients. We're doing a big push into the small business world. We want to get small business owners and entrepreneurs and mom and pop folks. We want to make a big splash with them, and we'd like to book 6 or 8 or 10 dates all around the country for this sponsored speaking tour. How much of that sponsorship is coming across your desk, or do you think is that something on its way in, on its way out? Where is the sponsorship world?
Yeah, I don't work a lot in that space myself, but I've had a few limited occasions where somebody would contact us to book a speaker, where either maybe there's somebody who's exhibiting at a conference, and part of their exhibitor package, somehow they have the right to put a speaker on stage. So a case like that, or a case where it's a client conference for an association or some organization, and they're bringing a speaker in there. So my experience has been limited, but I do think that there are other speakers who have done well with that, and somebody else could probably offer a lot better insights on it than I could. But I do think it's a very valid approach, particularly with budgets being tighter the way they've been lately. It's, we know that companies, if you can help somebody reach their target audience, if your message or your background somehow, let's say if you connect with a banking audience, then you could team up with this vendor that also wants to reach bankers, and somehow work together to put on an event, or they book you for one of their events. I think it's very, very valid, and it's kind of an innovative way to work around, quote, meeting budgets, but I just don't have a lot of personal experience to address the ins and outs of that.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Before we leave your IASB experience, I wanted to ask you if there are any key nuggets or takeaways that you took personally or professionally, or that you are excited about sharing with your speakers and your clients now that you're back home.
Yeah, a couple of nuggets that I wrote down. One of our speakers was Guy Kawasaki, who, I don't know if you're familiar with him, not to be confused with Robert Kiyosaki.
That's right.
The rich dad, poor dad guy. But Guy was I believe his title was chief evangelist at Apple back in the 80s when the Mac first came out. And he's kind of a venture capitalist now, and a founder of a website called AllTop, kind of a tech guy, but a really cool guy. One of the things, it was just a passing note in his presentation talking about marketing and building businesses, he said, you've got to plant a lot of seeds, scatter them around, not all in one place, plant a lot of seeds building toward critical mass, and then you hit critical mass at some point, and that's where, that's when we see the proverbial overnight success. And he wasn't talking about that related to speakers, but that's the light bulb that went off in my head. I think that's very true of how to build a successful speaking business today. It's not just about sending out these brochures, but it's really about, it's whether it's social media, email marketing, contacting meeting planners, blogging. It's all these things put together, publishing, and over time you get more and more people talking about you. Then you hit that critical mass, and now all of a sudden you're a star. But I think just because of the dynamics of the market today, I just think that was a good lesson that I'll be sharing with speakers for sure. That one and the other one came from one of the leaders from MPI, actually. And she was talking about how speakers can be a better partner to meeting planners, again, in the broadest sense of the word.
Right.
But, she said, see yourself in the business of learning rather than in the business of just speaking. And what she was talking about was, again, that are you a speaker? You deliver the keynote and that's it. Or are you in the business of learning where you can speak, but then you also have some type of follow-up available? And the way she put it was to help the meeting host prevent event vaporization, which I love the way she put that. But we all know that no matter, you could be the greatest speaker and go up there and rock it for 45 minutes or an hour, but still within minutes or days, your message, at least most of it, is gone, just because, people get back to their normal life, get back to the real world. So if you can offer some way to help them, that helps your audience, but it also adds value to the meeting planner, whoever that person is. So those were just a couple of nuggets that I think are very valid.
I love those. And it's so interesting because really in the 1990s and in the 2000s, a lot of speakers started out their careers as trainers. And everyone who had the solid training background, they were doing full-day programs, multi-day programs. Then all of a sudden it became really sexy to be a keynote speaker. And, you know, how – and the challenge then, of course, was, well, how do I take my two-day course that I've taught for 10 years and make a compelling 45-minute keynote? And now – you know, the keynote speaker is like, well, that's nice, but, you know, can you come and really implement this with us over the course of 2 days, 3 days, 6 months, a year? You know, how can we really have a serious impact that goes way beyond the keynote? So I guess somewhere there's a whole bunch of trainers that became speakers that are like, aha, it's Revenge of the Nerds. We finally win. People actually want training and learning and development, and they don't want the quick, you know, quick piece of candy. They want the full 7-course meal.
Exactly. And, you know, over these last couple of years, I've seen those speakers who were the true keynote speakers. They're the ones who I've seen, a lot of them that have struggled. Some of them have actually gone out of business. And then you have the trainers on the other side who say that they've had some of the best years of their business. And, you know, I don't know, say what you will about it, but that seems to be what the market wants, at least right now.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to the bureau side of your world, and we just have a couple sort of quick hit questions here with maybe 2-3 short ideas on each one of these. What are some of the biggest myths that people have about speakers' bureaus? We talked about a small handful before, but anything that we missed in that category as far as myths?
Yeah, the big ones we hit on is, you know, number one, a speaker's bureau is not your sales force, and also that a speaker's bureau is more geared toward helping meeting planners or those who are buying speakers. Those are two things you need to know about bureaus. Other than that, I would say anything else we could say relates to that in some way. If you understand those dynamics, you understand what a bureau is really about, you'll be leaps and bounds ahead of other speakers who are trying to get in with bureaus but going about it the wrong way with this misconception of what they are.
Yeah. And then how about marketing tools? What do your clients want to see from the speakers they're considering? You mentioned one sheet earlier in our conversation. People say, one sheet? Oh my God. Who uses a one sheet? A one sheet's on paper, or it's a PDF. And is that, you know, everything's on the web, everything's electronic, couldn't it just be a web page? Do they need a one sheet? Do they need a video online, video on a DVD? Do they need a book? I mean, what are some of the must-have tools in your opinion?
Sure. The one sheet, it's, you know, that's not something that I'm asked for every day. Sometimes for, you know, somebody going into a meeting, a committee meeting, a one sheet is helpful. And more than anything, I would say the thing about a one sheet is anybody can go. If it's an individual, sure, they're going to go on your website and read through all that. If they go into a meeting, they're going to have to present you in some way. And the one thing about a one sheet is at least that way you can control the information that they will, assuming if you can get them to take the one sheet to the meeting, you can control the information they share versus taking a chance of, you know, you don't know what page they're going to print off from your website. So there is value in that from the one sheet standpoint. But the big thing, a video is important. I mean, we live in a video world, and I don't have all the stats on YouTube, and we know how popular that site is, and we expect videos everywhere these days, and it's the same for speakers. When I surveyed some of our clients recently, asking them, okay, what is it when you come to a speaker profile on a speakers bureau website, what's the first thing you want to see? And video was by far the number one choice. That's what they're looking for. More than the bio, more than anything else, they want to see the video first. And, you know, we talked about this offline too, that said, as important as a video is, don't just go out there and, you know, put together some rough video just so you can say you've got a video, because if that's going to be the first impression, you know, you probably don't want to risk that. If the video doesn't accurately depict who you are, or at least who you want to be seen as, you know, hold off on the video and take your chances with the bio and some other materials. But the video is the big thing. And then if that draws them in, then you need the, you know, the supporting content, your bio, your background, testimonials, what is your presentation about, what are the takeaways, you know, all those kind of basics.
So besides not listening to any of the advice that you just shared over the last 55 minutes, what are some of the other big mistakes that you see speakers make in their marketing? So clearly, if they're not listening to what we've talked about, they're already, you know, their heads are totally in the wrong place. But anything else, kind of killer mistakes or maybe even some non-fatal mistakes that you just see way too often?
The first thing that comes to mind is these postcards. We've all seen these postcards that speakers have, whether it's the normal size or 5x7, 5x8. I've seen so many of those postcards. For me, 99.9% of them go straight to the trash can just because they all look the same. It's the picture. It says, you know, book me now. Here are my topics. There's too much content crammed into this postcard. And when there's, you know, how many of these coming across my desk every week, I don't have time to look at it. And it's not just the postcard. Postcards can work, but if it's just this one postcard, if that's the only time I see you and it goes straight to the trash can, well, then it was a waste of your money and it was, you know, a waste of paper. It didn't help any of us. So I guess more than the postcard, more than the actual medium is what is the strategy behind it. And I would say, if you're going to make that kind of investment, at least invest in doing a campaign, whether it's, you know, send out 6 postcards instead of one. And instead of sending one postcard to 50,000 people, try to narrow down your field and send, you know, 5 postcards to 10,000 people or whatever it may be. But a campaign is the bottom line there. Pick out who it is you really want to win over as a client and invest something. Go a little bit deeper with them instead of this shotgun approach where you're kind of playing the numbers game and, okay, well, if 99.9% of my postcards go in the trash, hopefully I can get some bookings out of the 0.1%. That's one thing. Just in the way things are today, I don't think the postcard is as effective as it used to be. And I don't know, you're a marketing guy. I don't know what your thoughts are. Maybe that's a pet peeve of mine, but that's one thing I would say.
Sure. Well, would you put a postcard? I'm guessing you would put a postcard in a separate container than a handwritten note. So if someone met you at an event, or someone's just been sort of, you know, following you, and they're doing a little kind of soft touch marketing, if it's a handwritten note saying, "Hey, dear Sean, you know, just wanted to let you know I came back from the American Beef Ranchers Association, you know, had a great gig, here's some testimonials," but it's a handwritten note or a handwritten letter or card, is that better than a postcard?
Definitely. That shows a personal touch there. And even the postcards, I'm not trying to just, you know, just nail postcards. Actually, a speaker I work with named Alan Carl, who I think you know as well, we actually got to know each other. Alan did this great postcard campaign, there was more involved than just postcards, but I think it was, I want to say maybe 4 postcards, but every postcard had a handwritten note on it. It said, "Sean, you know, whatever it said, I don't know. It was a thoughtful message, not just a, you know, book me now.
Book me, book me now."
Right. So there was a personal note to it. And actually the postcards led up to eventually getting the package that had his DVD and other materials in it. But if I noticed the first one because it had handwriting on it, yeah, I would have still probably forgotten about him if that was all I got. But then I got another one next week, and it had the same look, and it was branded. So I thought, "Huh, there's that guy again." And then I get another one the next week with another handwritten note. And then I think that last one said something better is coming, and then I get the package, and of course I opened it. So I guess that's the moral of the story, is try to make the person on the receiving end feel like that they're actually important to you, and not just another anonymous number.
Yeah, like a little courtship that, you know that you're being courted, and maybe even you're looking forward to the next postcard or the next package.
Exactly,
What's this crazy guy going to send me next?
Right, exactly. So it's not that difficult. It's pretty basic. Just put a little extra thought and a little extra time in it.
Now, I hope when he says to you, "Something better is coming," did that package have some candy in it or some coffee or some some goodie? Or it's like, "Hey, don't worry, something better is coming. Here's my marketing kit." Or was it something more fun?
Right. Well, it was if I were to be critical of any aspect of the campaign, I think the payoff could have been a little bit better.
Send candy, people. Send candy.
Exactly, or you know, something. It was a cool package. I don't remember exactly what was in it, but certainly, if you're going to set the expectations, then you want to deliver.
Yeah, someone sends me something that says, you know, something better is coming. I mean, it better be chocolate. That's all I'm saying. here's more postcards.
Exactly.
All right. Anyway, let me ask you this. This has been so fabulous, and I've got two sort of humdinger questions in front of me here. The first one is, let's talk about the distinction in your mind and how you would advise your clients between, you know, how do they choose their distribution model? And by that I mean, you know, there's a couple of different kinds of speaker. There's the sort of working professional speaker. Maybe they're a member of the National Speakers Association. Maybe they're not. Maybe they're a consultant or an author. But, you know, they're out there speaking, and that's their bread and butter. Then we have celebrity speakers, and celebrities could be from Hollywood or TV or, you know, the world of sports or current events or astronauts or any of that kind of thing. And then we have sort of like the non-speaker speakers. We have the corporate executives, the entrepreneurs who are primarily known for their entrepreneurship, not known as speakers, but they're getting those speaking gigs simply because of their accomplishments and their fame in some different realm. I guess you can call those celebrities too, but, you know, they're less celebrities than the media celebrities. So
right.
How, you know, what's the marketplace look like? And if you're not happy with the results that you're getting, how could you get a little bit of celebrity rub off or accomplishment rub off onto your brand and onto your persona?
Well, I am I'm a big fan of blogging, and I think blogging has a lot of opportunities, particularly if you're talking about trying to build up some celebrity. If you can, you know, maybe if you don't have a lot of celebrity, then maybe a little bit trickier to get traffic to your blog, but look for who has some celebrity status and you could write on their blog, do a guest post on their blog. So that's one way you can do it, is look at that. And I guess the bigger umbrella there is talking about content, thinking who is your target audience and then what are the issues they're interested in. Everybody's, you know, out there looking, whether they're out there watching videos, reading blog posts, following people on Twitter. Where is your target audience and how can you get in front of them, share your expertise, your story, whatever it may be, how can you get that in front of them and reach them that way? That was when I did that survey, and I asked about, you know, what is it that a meeting planner wants to see on a profile? The first thing was video, but I also, in a separate survey, asked, what is it that you want to see on a speaker's website? And it was fresh content to show that this person is current and this isn't just a canned program that they've been doing the last 20 years. So take that and any place you can get your content out there. I mean, content these days makes you an expert, makes you a celebrity, at least to that person. So that's one thing I would say. Of course, there are plenty of things you could do, but that's the first thing that comes to mind. Along the lines of
absolutely. Well, also let me ask you, just in your booking pie, if we were to make a 100% pie chart, whether we're talking about the folks that you work with at the speakers group or just the bookings that are kind of coming across your desk in general, what percentage of that pie would you say are the paid professional speakers versus the celebrities versus the executives and entrepreneurs and people who are more invited to speak because of their accomplishments versus who they are or their, you know, their speaking prowess?
Good question. Most of them, I think, are the paid professional speakers, and somebody that they maybe they came from an educational background or from a business background, but they're now, you know, pretty much full time as a speaker. That would be the majority. And then, then also the celebrity, that's a small portion of it. I deal more with the business type speakers, so I don't do as much with, say, celebrity or athletes or political figures, those types. But the other, you know, the other part of that would be an author, somebody who writes a business book that maybe is not out there as a full-time speaker. Yeah, but you write a book that catches on, people are going to ask you to speak. So those types, those would be the most popular speakers, most common speakers I book. I don't do as much with the professionals who speak, who are known for a certain area of expertise, and somebody asks them to speak. Now that, we got a little bit of that with when social media was on the rise. People wanted somebody that could help with social media. And a lot of times that would come from from some type of firm where they were, had some thought leadership in the social media space. So you'd have, that kind of person. But that's kind of a breakdown for me.
So I'm really disappointed because it sounds like you're not getting a lot of demand for Snooki.
I'm sorry to say I have not had an opportunity to book Snooki.
Wow.
I booked one reality show person in my whole 13 plus career. It was actually one of the couples that came out of The Bachelor early on.
That's
kind of the little odd, odd story. This whole thing reminds me of just one extra point to throw out
there.
I just shared who I book, a profile of the speakers I book, but every speakers bureau has a different personality and a kind of a different niche. And you'll find some bureaus that are very much celebrity oriented, some that have, all the reality people are there. And, so that's an important thing for a speaker to know is to, when you're looking at speakers bureaus, instead of just, blasting all the speakers bureaus around the world, look for the ones that specialize in your field. I know of a bureau that specializes in the agricultural space. So think about who you are, who your target clients are, and then look for a bureau that fits really well with that.
Hugely important. And there are so many niche bureaus, like you're saying. They're ones that just focus on financial services, just focus on healthcare, just focus on, the K-12 or college market. And so knowing what and who is a saleable asset for the specific bureau that you're talking to is hugely important because, number one, it means you've done your homework. Number two, it means that you're a relevant resource. And number three, it means that you both stand a chance of making some nice money together. You're not wasting that bureau owner or agent's time. And you're also not, you're not doing the spray and pray marketing where you're just plastering the world with postcards or phone calls or anything else. You're really targeting and selecting and saying, here are the best partners for me. And here are the folks that have a higher likelihood of looking at me as an investable asset.
Definitely.
Love it. So last question, kind of home run question here for you, home stretch. Parting words of wisdom. Any specific advice to speakers who may just be starting out, or even maybe sprinkle in some mid-career speaker advice, or even some advanced speaker advice that you share with the clients that you're working with at the speakers group? Because maybe there's all three levels. There's some words of wisdom for all three of our groups that might be listening in.
Yeah, I think something I would offer that really applies to anyone, no matter where you are in your speaking career, would be to really take time to focus and know who you are and identify what your business is all about. And this is a process that we've just gone through here at the speakers group, because it's easy. You get going and you just kind of take this broad approach and, I'll take whatever business comes to me. I don't really know who my target audience is, but if you'll book me, I'll just throw this stuff out there and take whatever comes. And in the crowded marketplace that we're in today, that just makes it really difficult. As I've told speakers, you can become the person who does what you do. So if this is what they're looking for, you've drilled it down to where you are that person, or you can just become one of, thousands of speakers out there, and you're just hoping to get a piece of the pie. There's a quote actually from Jerry Garcia that a speaker shared with me that is something to the effect of, you don't have to be the best at what you do. You just have to be seen as the only one who does what you do. And I think that's true for speakers. It's about identity, establishing your brand, and you can still work with, that doesn't mean that, you know, let's say if customer service, for instance, if that's your topic, you know, what industry do you specialize in, or what, who is a good audience for you? And I guess what I'm trying to say is take customer service is very broad. So drill it down a little bit further. What is your angle on customer service? And, another quote comes to mind from also from Guy Kawasaki from one of his books called Reality Check that stuck with me. And this is actually, it's in, if you sign up for the Succeed Speaking Toolkit, it's one of those 21 ideas, or one of the 24, I should say, but he calls it the opposite test. And he says, if basically you look at your competitors and if everybody's saying the same thing, then you're really saying nothing.
Yeah.
If everybody says, well, I'm motivational, I engage the audience, I customize, well, that all that sounds pretty good, except when you look and you realize everybody's saying the same thing. So how can you say something a little bit different so you stand out from the crowd? And then that, if you take the time to work through that, that carries through everything you do. That says, that defines how you present on stage, what your marketing materials look like, what your website looks like. So be willing to be a little bit bold and create an identity for yourself. And then once you do that, be patient and have a strategy, put those seeds out there, build toward that critical mass, and you know, patience, persistence. Those are some other things that come to mind. You know, I know all of us, we're entrepreneurs and we have all these ideas and these great things we want to do. So, you know, if you've got, it's really hard to lock into one thing. You've got these other things. Well, put these other things, you know, make a note, save the file, whatever you need to do. And, you know, you can come back once you get this one thing established, then you start adding additional layers to it. But at least focus, like you said, focus on this one thing and build it up before you start trying to bring other things into the mix.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Because as shiny object syndrome people, we often lack that sense of timeline, that sense of, you know, oh, this is a great idea, I love doing this. And, you know, the answer is great idea, but not for now. So I love what you're saying, right? Save it, document it, put it in your someday maybe file, and then get back to the business at hand, which is running the current business that you're probably more fabulous at than you think you are.
very good point.
So with that note, let me thank my friend Sean Ellis, and speaking of the phrase, more fabulous than he thinks he is, that totally applies to you, my friend. Thank you for your generosity of ideas and thoughts, and I want to encourage people one more time to check out Sean's empire. The Hybrid Bureau 2.0 empire is online at thespeakersgroup.com, and where Sean helps speakers make more money and have more fun and get their heads screwed on straight is www.succeedspeaking.com, and that's also where you can get the toolbox with Sean's special reports, videos, checklists, 24 tips, not 21, at www.succeedspeaking.com. So Sean Ellis, thank you. An awesome, awesome experience, a ton of knowledge. I encourage you, not you, Sean, but you listening, rewind your audio. Just go back to the beginning, take out a big fat yellow legal pad, and take a ton of notes, because Sean shared so much. I have half a page of notes, and I knew what we were talking about ahead of time.
Thank you, David. It's been an honor talking with you, and I've been a fan of your work for a long time, and I think what you're doing, you represent this fresh approach to marketing and the kind of marketing that works today. So it's fun for me to talk to you. I know we could talk all day about all these things, but I hope there have been some good nuggets here to help your listeners.
Hugely valuable. Thank you, Sean, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, David.